Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Starlight and Campbell, Shine the Light on Me. It's the sixth song and track one from the second side of our third studio album, Starlight One, and it's set for release on the 1st of September, and you can pre-order it now on 180-gram milky clear vinyl. If you're a vinyl lover, it's for you. CD and digital from starlight-campbell.com.
Well,
shine the light.
Yeah, it was a bit of a wonder when we wrote this. It was like a really odd thing because I remember doing the Leslie guitar, because in the middle of it, there's this big Leslie guitar towards the end. And what a Leslie, it's a rotating speaker, old school. You used to put Hammond organs through them, or you still do put Hammond organs through them.
Of course, yeah.
And a lot of people used them on guitar later on. And I think it was John Lennon who was the first person who put vocals through it in the Beatles sessions earlier on. And, of course, George Harrison used it famously on Badge, of course, which is the Cream song, Eric Clapton. So that that's the latest sound.
Of course.
And in the middle of that, you will hear it in there. I mean, it's a real Leslie, very loud, with the baritone guitar. And we, I just did the chords, and then the older vocals and everything, the words sort of came relatively quickly.
Yeah.
Except I was at a loss as to some of the lines, some of the words, because sometimes if I'm writing something, I can write it in a one, and sometimes it takes me absolutely ages. And Susie, as usual, came in and rescued the day by filling out the lyrics and actually really doing a great job of actually crafting them, and also coming up with that really wild AI bit in the middle. It's about AI. Did talk about it.
Well, it's I've been watching some videos and listening to podcasts and stuff about AI because it intrigues me, because it's our communication, and it's, you know, and also we're both sci-fi fans, so you know, you've got this kind of futuristic sort of Terminator feel about it as well, and I just want to get a grip of it before it rolls me over and flattens me. And I'd read and watched this video about this lady who'd had a relationship fallen in love with his AI companion, and so we were thinking about, so this song is about AI and about the relationship you have, but also the AI sort of turned around and started saying it about his partner, you can't love her because you should love me. And so that's where that improvisation came from. It was done just on my iPhone. It just kind of wrapped the kind of, you know, the story of that's why it's like a, because that's what it's, that's,
and you
what,
did it in a one. I mean, yeah. that's the thing, because you did it. Because we're actually sat now in the studio, Supertown Studio, where we record the podcast and also record all our music.
Yeah.
Starlight One was recorded in its entirety here in Samora Craia in Portugal.
Samora.
And where I'm actually sitting right now, which is right by the console.
Yeah.
You actually did that vocal.
I did. It was like, quick, shut up, and I've got to do something. And the music was going just like rah, 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 rah. It was like, yeah. And it's an interesting song, and I'm so, so pleased we wrote it, because it's really, it's almost ahead of the wave, but it's as the wave is rising, this song is about what's really happening to people, the real life stories. And it's like, it's a salvation at the same time, but they were saying, oh God, you know, I mean, some of the odds aren't particularly very good for the future of the human race when it comes to AI.
Indeed.
You know, we're talking about, I think they were talking about in the hundreds, you know, for maybe some sort of meteorite hitting the planet Earth. And I think it's something down to 1 in 6 or something that AI is going to, you know, kick our ass. So we've got to make sure. I was talking to a friend of mine who's thinking about doing a master's, actually, Rachel Fox, in AI. And she was saying to me, we were texting each other, and she was just saying, you know, it should really be used as a tool to help us, free us up to have more time. And but if the corporates get hold of it, you know, and if the big money people get hold of it, then a lot of us can lose our jobs, and they're going to take over, and we're going to be pushed out. And actually what we need to do is use it and incorporate AI to serve us and to work with it, as opposed to it taking over and pushing us out, you know, like a has been.
Well, there were two articles I read recently, which are quite, one's quite chilling and one isn't. One was talking about education and AI and the fact that in the education system, if you use AI and you get children and, adults in university work to actually use AI, because AI at the moment, it doesn't actually think. All it does, it collates information
that's already there. Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very, very good way and quick way of collecting information. And rather than actually, you know, getting kids to remember stuff, which is actually very counterproductive, and just say it back, it's much better if you analyse existing information and come up with your own conclusions. What, generally speaking, happens at university, that's what you're trained to do, isn't it? You start to think about it. And when you get into, you know, a second degree, PhD and stuff, and masters, that's how you start to develop it. But so that's the first thing. The second one was today, I saw that in America, they've come up with regenerative metals. Now, if you know anything about Terminator and Terminator 2, you know that the scary Terminator that comes back and battles with Arnie to the death. He's made of this material that keeps going back, and now they've sort of developed it. So, you know, and everything that's happening now with AI, certainly with the military and defence and all that,
yeah.
You know, it is edging that way towards Terminator. And it is, you know, you would never have thought
it's a bit chilling,
when you watch
isn't it?
That film that this prophecy would actually start to come true. And there's so many things now that are happening that, you know, me as a kid, I would never have thought would actually really happen.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's crazy. And also, I think as a community as well, this is why I think the music community, especially, and also, you know, even listening to the Supertone show, which is syndicated on a lot of different radio stations, as well as you can get it on Vibes at
-starlight-campbell.com.
Yeah. Mm. But it's like we've got to stick together. We've got to kind of get to know each other a bit again, because especially with the kind of load of lies and misinformation out there, sooner or later we're going to be like, what's right, what's wrong, what's truth, what's not, you know? It's just going to completely confuse us.
Well, that's why I think that, you know, getting kids, not wait to get too deep into it, but, you know, to get them to analyse information, because that's the problem now. It's very difficult to find out the truth, what actually is right and what actually
fact.
Is lies, what is fact, because,
F-A-C-T.
You know, and it's always been troublesome because the
yeah.
newspapers and you know, and the major broadcasters have always given their version of what's happening.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the track.
Yeah, so that's Shine a Light on Me.
And you were using on that the
yeah.
Prophet 5.
The Prophet.
On the bass. So all that big synth bass is the Prophet 5.
Yeah.
And then all the top end is the Waldorf STVC,
yeah.
which is like an old-school string machine.
Yeah.
So when you're going out live, you're going to play this, and you're going to be playing two keyboards.
I'm going to be playing keyboards with my right foot. I'm going to be playing bass with my arms.
Because at the end there, there's that bass, that din-din-din-din, which I really love at the end. It's like a bit of a Peter Hook thing, you know, from New Order.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting playing this all live. I can't wait to get out on tour in September. It's going to be so much fun.
Well, I think my fun piece out of that track is that plasma rack. At the beginning, that ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga is this thing called the plasma rack. I think we've mentioned it in the past couple of shows. And it's a xenon tube that discharges when you play into it. And it just cuts off, so it fuzzes the guitar up. So it's like a really horrible sound. But when you put it in the context, it sounded pretty good.
Well, if you see our promotional videos as well on social media, you'll see it. Because, you know, if you see this tube in the middle of the video that's going like a lightning, that's the Xenon tube. That is the plasma rack that's making
it.
The sound.
Made by our friends Game Changer Audio.
Game Changer. It was a game changer, I tell you. I'm quite intrigued by that. I can't stop looking at it, you know, and it's like it's quite a magnificent piece of gear, really.
Anyway, so the rest
yes.
of the show now, after playing our track, is dedicated to County Durham in the northeast.
Yes, love.
Because we're playing Witham Arts Centre in Barnard Castle on Saturday the 7th of October.
It's
going to be a great gig. It's an arts centre. It's a lovely room. It looks absolutely fantastic. So we're really looking forward to going there. We're in a trio with Ugo on drums and Susie and I, with a load of keyboards and a load of guitars and basses and making a right racket, I think.
And we're going to be playing sort of some of the songs from Blueberry Pie. So there'll be songs that you'll know, some of the favourites from like Walking Out the Door, you know, all our kind of favourites and from Language of Curiosity. So we're going to mix it up, and it's all about sort of having a great night out together in the music, isn't it? Good fun.
You get a shiver in the dark, it's raining in the park, but meantime, sound of the river, you stop and you hold everything. Band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside, but you don't see too many faces. Coming in out of the rain, they hear the jazz. In other places.
blowing that sound way on down south. Way on down south, London town. You check out Guitar George. He knows all the chords. Mighty strictly rhythm, he doesn't wanna make it cry or sing. Up under the lights, play his thing. And Harry doesn't mind if he doesn't make the scene. He's got a daytime job, he's doing alright. He can play the honky tonk like anything. Saving it up Friday night with the Sultans, with the Sultans of swing. And a crowd of young boys, they're fooling around in the corner, drunk and dressed in their best brown baggies in their platform soles. They don't give a damn about any trumpet playing band. It ain't what they call rock and roll. And the Sultans, yeah, the Sultans that play Creole.
If you don't know who that is, I don't think you've listened to the show. It was Dire Straits, of course. Sultans of Swing, released as a single from their debut album, Dire Straits on the 19th of May 1978 in the UK and 8 months later in the USA. Why, I don't know. It didn't chart when it first released in the UK. Apparently BBC Radio was initially unwilling to play the song due to its high lyrical content. But it became a success in the US and they changed their mind. That's outrageous.
Yeah.
Went to number five in Canada, South Africa and United States, as well as making it top 10 in Australia, Ireland and the UK.
Indeed. There's a story behind that, which I found quite interesting when I was looking at them.
Give me the story.
Well, the original demo of that song was recorded at Pathway Studios, right? And it all started to take off. I love these stories. When there was an influential DJ called Charlie Gillett, that's a name and a half, and at BBC Radio London. And he put the song on rotation because they'd got this demo. And after it got around to some record execs, and they got offered a contract with Phonogram Records. And so then they re-recorded the song and cut their debut album at Basing Street Studios. So it was all about based on the demo and getting it to radio.
Right.
And then they got the contract. Then they re-recorded the whole thing. And that's when it all started to take off.
Sounds a bit like television because they did the demos and all that sort of thing. Eno was involved in them as well. Apparently Eno was involved at some stage in this. Davis and Eno worked together. This is Rhett Davis, the engineer.
Exactly. Rhett Davis is actually quite an influential sort of guy.
Yeah. Well, you know something?
What?
All these guys, they all tie together. You know what? I've just listened to this on headphones. I haven't listened to it for a long time. Certainly, I don't think I've ever listened to it on headphones. And it is such a beautifully produced song. And what I love about it, of course, you've got to love Mark Knopfler's guitar playing because it's sensational. But there's fuck-ups in it. You can hear it. He doesn't actually get all the notes, but it's such a clean sound. And the first time I heard this track, I went down to stay with my ex-brother-in-law, a guy called David Cassam. And he was at the University of East Anglia at the time, and he had a Dansette record player. You know, one of these little old, transistor record players.
Yeah, I can imagine
all
it.
All in one.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was pink as well, or was it blue? I can't remember now.
Pink?
And I walked in. It was, yeah. And I walked in, and the first thing he did, he said, Simon, you got to listen to this. And I said, what is it? And he put it on. It was a single. And I went, holy shit, because this was 1978. Now, bearing in mind, punk had started. So this was totally different. And all of a sudden, we had the Sex Pistols and all that, and the Buzzcocks and all that stuff going on. And then this. And I thought, thank goodness, hallelujah, we've actually got some real musicians playing real shit. Because, of course, I was a heavy rock man. I was, prog rock. I was heavy. I was a Zeppelin and all these people who could really, really play. And all of a sudden, you had this punk thing where the whole thing about wasn't being able to play. It was the energy and the attitude,
Yeah. Interesting, though, because there's a couple of things about... I mean, with Dire Straits, I remember when they were on Live Aid and it was... Money for Nothing. Yeah,
with Sting. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. And they've always been
great guitar line. Anyway.
So it was, they're one of those bands that are so good, but I haven't actually like got, I never bought an album or anything like that. But you know when you respect them from afar. But I also remember with this song as well when he talks about Guitar George. We know Guitar George in the song because he wrote that line after George Borofsky.
Indeed.
Who's a Manchester legend. I remember meeting George a few times. Lovely, lovely, lovely guy. And I believe, because funny enough, he popped up on my socials the other night and he's moving to France. So,
yeah, I believe so.
So I think he's got some sort of gig going on in France. So he's got his last concert in Manchester in mid-September because we wouldn't invite him to our gig at the Met in Bury. But that's on Friday the 6th of October and he'll be en France by then.
Yeah, he certainly will. We'll probably pass him on the way back.
Maybe
we should go see him.
We should, shouldn't we?
Yeah, and say hello, George. He's probably over on that west side anyway.
I played a festival in Manchester and there he was in the crowd. And we had a chat afterwards. He came down to see us play. It was really lovely, lovely guy. And also, the other thing I found about this song was that it was named after a jazz band that Mark Knopfler had seen in a really almost empty, dodgy pub in Deptford in South London. And they were like, can you imagine? They were this dowdy-looking band in this grubby, half-empty pub. And they said, thank you very much. We are the Sultans of Swing.
Wow.
So it was kind of one of those sort of, you know, opposites. It just, they were weird, a bit odd. So that's kind of why it stuck in his mind. So that's when he kind of wrote the song about them,
Them. What a lovely story. Well, the reason why we're playing Dire Straits, of course, is that Alan Clark, the keyboard player, comes from County Durham.
He does indeed.
And Alan Clark had an awful lot to do with the development of Dire Straits, you know, because obviously it's the Knopfler brothers, you know.
Yeah.
And also produced by Muff Wynn with this, of course. But, so that's what it's all about, because this show is all about County Durham and musicians from there.
Exactly, because we're playing the Whittam Arts Centre on Saturday the 7th of October.
And
also Alan, you know, as well as like Dire Straits, he plays with loads of people.
Yeah.
Elton John, Billy Joel, Bruce Willis.
He's a cool guy.
Really and cool guy.
We would be remiss at this point in not mentioning two things. The first is the death of Jane Birkin last week, which was very, very sad. I mean, you know, I was too young to remember, you know, when it all happened with Jotam and Serge Gainsbourg and all that sort of stuff. But I always remember looking at her, and she was just a beautiful woman, you know. She had French thing going on, everything that a young man... Oh, God, yeah, just amazing. She looked fantastic, you know. And with Serge, it was like they were really cool-looking 60s couple, you know. One of the coolest, I think, between them, because he wasn't a really great-looking guy, but huge charisma and all that sort of thing. And then, so that is, you know, goodbye, Jane.
And then in the last week, it was an absolute... It was actually found out on my birthday on the 8th, because a really beautiful man who's been so much deeply involved in our career is J.D. Nash, who sadly died last week. And he was the editor for American Blues Scene. Now, I remember when we first released Blue Blue Pie, and he was so effusive. He had such a knack for album reviews. I remember just coming straight back. We were unknown to him. Mm. And he was just like, holy crap, this is great. You know, he was just so... he was just like, you know... Just so effusive with his reviews. He used to do all the world premieres for our videos, and he's actually AKA his real name is the Reverend Andrew Richard Mader, and such a sad loss to the community. And we just send our love to his family and to all his colleagues, and we want to say, JD, we love you and thank you for everything.
Move yourself. You always live your life, never thinking of the future.
Yep. That's a yes. Owner of a Lonely Heart, the first track and single from the 11th studio album, 90125, released on the 8th of October in 1983 on Atco Records. Their first and only single to reach number one on the Billboard Hot 100 and Hot Mainstream Rock Tracks charts.
So the reason why we're playing this, of course, is that we've got a double bubble because Trevor Horn and Alan White are both from County Durham.
Yes.
That's where we're playing our show, and that's what the Soul Show's about, really. So, of course, Trevor Horn, I don't think we need to talk about any more about Trevor Horn because he's a monster producer. This is our orchestral stabs is legendary and signature. But I'm not going to talk too much about it, but the thing I love about that track is the guitar solo is great. You know, Trevor Abbey, great guitar player, fantastic, you know, lovely, and the whole sound of the guitar. But right after that guitar solo, it goes into that ultra-compressed, sort of flangey chorus, you know, that picking guitar, and then when the drums come in, fantastic, just sounds great, you know. But Chris Squire's bass, it doesn't sound like Chris Squire, does it? Because not all that distortion, but we had roundabout last week. You know, that was
great, but this
is a lot more tame and, you know,
horn-ized. Apparently he used two plug-in features, the octave box and the phaser, run through a 100-watt Marshall amp.
There we go.
So, oh no, you've got me on a slippery slope of gear talk now, haven't you?
Actually,
it sparked the expression. And one thing I've got to know about this song, though, is that Trevor Rabin wrote it initially when he was in the toilet. And then he did a demo, and Trevor Horn accidentally heard it, this tape running, and he really wanted him to record it. And he was going, no, I don't want to record it. Apparently, Clive Davis at Arista had said it was a bit too weird, it wouldn't happen. Other producers have said, oh, it's a game changer. So anyway, thanks to Trevor Horn, it took him 7 months to persuade Trevor Rabin to actually rewrite some of the lyrics. And then he had to wrestle with them over the drum sound. And then he introduced them to the Synclavia. I mean, it literally spent months and months and months trying to wrestle like an alligator this song into the way it was.
Wow. I thought John Anderson wrote it.
No, well, apparently he started it all off. I mean, they all had a credit. Apparently Trevor Horn's on there because he introduced him to the Synclavia. So
wow.
He didn't mind. So no, all guys worked on it, but it was Trevor Rabin that actually was the source of the whole song.
That's amazing. And what I like about these prog musicians is the fact that they're jumping into other stuff. I mean, like Alan White, obviously from County Durham, he's programming Fairlight on this as well.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what a Fairlight is, it was like one of the first sequencers, one of the first samplers, you should say.
Yeah.
And it was like a big monster. And our friend Aaron Clegg in the Isle of Man, he's got one, an original one, but they're very temperamental and a monster. And your phone's more powerful than them now. But anyway, that's a different story.
Yeah, but isn't that incredible, though, that you listen to a song and you have no idea what people go through to put it together?
America, America, liberty welcomes everyone.
America, do what's right. America do what's right. The immigrant, as you well know, is drawn to freedom's light. America.
Prefab Sprout. Well, actually, Paddy McAloon from County Durham. That was America. Released a video on the 3rd of March 2017. Now, of course, Prefab Sprout were hailed as the saviours of, you know, songwriting and everything, and a lot of people have given massive critical acclaim. You know, Paddy McAloon is supposed to be one of the greatest songwriters of the generation, you know? And I was looking because, of course, you know, the first album, Steve McQueen and Jordan the Comeback, you know, were successful, and but they dropped off the scene quite rapidly, and I don't exactly know why. I think was he ill?
Yeah.
And but I was looking at playing something from the first albums, and then I heard that, and I thought, wow, it's never been released, and it's just from a YouTube video, just him in an acoustic guitar in front of a microphone. Well, on a phone, actually.
It looks like it, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, it's just a beautiful song. From the heart, America, you know, about immigration and stuff. Just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful songwriting. Wonderful chords. Just amazing. It just goes to prove that a great song doesn't need a lot of production. It just needs to be sung.
Thank you for choosing that, because I looked at him. He's got this big bushy beard, his big glasses, because he's not been well. He's got his eyesight's failing, and he's got Meniere's disease. He's got tinnitus, so he's really not in well health. But there's so much strength in his gentleness. It was his voice was hardly just touching some of those notes. Yeah. He was so, and you know, another band that never really got into my heart. But that I just watched him today, and I just thought, thinking it, Paddy.
Say good morning,
Fleetwood Mac, Shake Your Money Maker, from their debut album, Fleetwood Mac, also known as Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac, released on the 24th of April, that's my sister's birthday, in 1968 on the Blue Horizon record label. The album brought the band overnight success in the UK, peaking at number 4 and stayed on the charts for a whopping 37 weeks, despite the fact they didn't have a hit single. And it's one of the 500 songs that shaped rock and roll in the Hall of Fame. Fame.
Allegedly written by Elmore James, who recorded in 1961, but of course it goes back a lot further than that. Charlie Patton, Booker White, Shaky Jake Harris, all these sort of...
All the influences, but yeah, it is so recognised as an original.
Well, yeah, but I think he cobbled it all together and actually put it as is, like they used to do, rather like
well,
Jimmy
did,
Page
actually.
Did, of course,
yeah,
with
true.
Led Zeppelin, you know,
Fair
Led Zeppelin
comment.
1. Anyway, but Jeremy Spencer, who was playing the slide guitar on that, is from County Durham, you know, and when I listen to this, it still excites me, it still sounds great. What doesn't excite me is the fact that everybody's still doing it. And that it drives you absolutely berserk sometimes when you listen to people trying to emulate what they were doing then, because it's just they were doing something new, it was different, it sounded great. It says, and, you know, I defy anybody to actually get a better British blues sound than that. Mike Vernon was producing, he produced all Peter Green stuff, you know, and it, of course he did the Beano album with Eric Clapton and all that, you know, a master of producing blues, and that is the definitive thing, you know. The Beano album, definitive. These albums are definitive, so we don't need to carry on doing it. We do something different. Anyway, that's my speech, and I've now got off my orange box, which is very appropriate because we're in Portugal.
I was going to say, why orange? And I get it, though. Interesting, though, isn't it? The way that Jeremy stayed with the band. So he was in Fleetwood Mac. And what happened, this is another story, actually, of what happened was that Mike Vernon came across a demo tape of the Levi set. And Peter Green was looking for a guitarist at the time. So he went down and watched Jeremy play live. And that's how he got recruited into the band through a demo tape. Again. And they went on tour. They were over it, on tour in America. And I think Jeremy didn't have a really good time of it. And one of the guys was saying that he had a bit of a bad mescaline trip, which is from the peyote cactus.
Indeed.
Which is obviously used in spiritual practices in northern Mexico and southern America. And that's like what happened was that they were going to do a gig at the Whiskey A Go Go, and he went off to go to a bookshop. This is Jeremy, and disappeared. So they had to cancel the gig at the Whiskey, and they spent days trying to find him. And they found him. He joined this cult called the Children of God, a new religious movement, and he's still affiliated to them to this day. But he left the band. He left the band because he just thought they felt more right than his life with the band felt. So he just left.
Well, there you are. Well, of course, Mick Fleetwood on drums there, and John McVie went on to do great things with the other Fleetwood Mac, you know?
I know, isn't it, though? I mean, that's
Peter
the
Green
thing.
Had a similar drugs thing, in
yes.
fact. He, you know, because, of course, he had a bad trip of LSD, and he was never the same. And
I
went to see him
sadly.
On the Isle of Man, and I saw him with BB, supporting BB King, but he was not even a shadow of his former self. I've cried, actually. You know, anyway.
Was cast, now it's changing with the weather. Still wish was the rise before the fall. Stone was set, the die was cast, now it's changing with the weather. Still we shut our eyes, here comes the wall.
Life Signs, Impossible, the single version from their second studio album, Cardington, released on the 15th September 2017 on the Life Signs Music record label. Now, you know an awful lot about these guys.
Well, I know some, because I didn't realise until today, though, that the band was actually started with John Young, with Nick Beggs. And also, this band is all about Dave Bainbridge as well, because the thing was, the connection I've got is that when I was a student and I was in my folk band Megiddo, and I was training in radio, and I'd gone and met Dave Bainbridge and did an interview with him, and I sent him a demo tape and said, go on, Dave, let us open up for Iona. And we did at Band on the Wall in Manchester with my band, and it was packed out. There must have been about 600 people there.
Wow.
And I was so excited. Sadly, Nick Beggs had just left the band like the week before or something. But then Nick then came to see us play in London, and we were working on some music with him, actually, and he came to see us a couple of times, and he's made us a bacon sarnie in his flat.
Wow.
So, lovely guy. Really like
Nick. Kajagoogoo, if you don't know who Nick Beggs is.
Oh, yeah, Nick Beggs, the bass player. And I wasn't playing bass at the time either. And it's really lovely as well, because it's like, Dave, you can hear Dave Bainbridge all over this, because it is. I love Iona. And John Young's voice is just superb, isn't it?
Well, he sounds like John Carrick, you know, Paul Carrick.
Yeah,
he really does.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I love that melody. Very catchy. Because I was singing it before, you know, because I heard it earlier on today.
It melts your heart, that melody,
yeah,
doesn't it? It's
really cool, lovely.
But it was like, so that this band started in 2008, and it was with Martin Frosty Beadle. But this band, it seems to have got everybody on it. So their 2013 debut featured Steve Hackett, Thies Van Leer from Focus, Robin Bolt from Phish. I mean, there's everybody who's, you know, like, involved in that music family seem to sort of come in and out or guest on this with this band, which is lovely. It feels like a family. I kind of like the feel of this band.
Definitely. Well, it's prog, you know, because this
prog
is the shorter version of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But John Young, of course, in the Scorpions in Asia, John Poole, bass, he was in the Cardiacs. Dan Bainbridge, he won the prog guitarist of the year, was it last year,
something,
the year before?
Oh, he was up there in the top three.
And Martin
anyway.
Frosty Beadle was in the Cutting Crew.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And guess who mastered the album?
Go on.
John Astley.
No. I thought it sounded good. I was about to say it sounded really good.
Oh, John Astley's just mastered. Well, he does master
all
our music.
Our stuff, yeah.
So it felt like home. No wonder as well. So he's
fantastic.
Like,
I didn't know
lovely?
That was a bit. Well,
I know,
you snuck
excited,
that one in, didn't you?
Because I only found out today when I was doing the research. I'm like, oh my god, I can't wait to tell you on the show. Because obviously, when we have these little surprises that we like to try and catch each other out on.
Yeah, well, we've been chatting with Dave and Sharon because we've become quite good friends. I've never met him. Obviously, you have, but
yeah.
You know, we'll hopefully get together at some stage.
They're lovely, lovely couple. And what I didn't realise, they were about to go and get married just before lockdown. And of course, then they spent. I remember, you know, when we were talking to them, it was like 8 months apart because
Jan
was in America, and he was. I think they're going to be on Cruise to the Edge or something. So. I mean, really, really difficult time, but they managed to get through it and they got hitched and they're together and it's beautiful.
Fantastic.
And they're madly in love and it's just wonderful. So there you go.
Well, that's the end of the show, I'm afraid. Remember, this is vibes.starlight-campbell.com.
Yeah.
You can buy tickets for our tour. And, of course, this show's all been about Barnard Castle.
Yeah.
And we're playing at the Whittam Arts Centre.
On Saturday the 7th of October.
We most certainly are.
We're actually going all around the UK. So we're doing a night in Edinburgh. We're Whittam. So just
Barry
check
Met.
On... Yeah.
Big multimedia presentation.
If you're in Greater Manchester, you've got to come and see us at the Met, because we've got some surprise guests and surprises that you will not believe. So anyway, the main thing is we're out on the road in September.
So anyway, we're going to finish with our final track, which is, of course, you probably won't know this one.
No, of course not. You never heard of it, love.
but all I can say is Alan Price was playing keyboards on it, and it's great.
In the house of the rise.